to business, my friends. Everything marches on to the insistent drumbeat of the farming calendar, and the quick march of calving now giving way to the slightly less frenetic pace of the breeding season. I wanted to spend a bit of time with somebody selling straws for artificial insemination to see if the changes that the dairy industry and consumers were pushing for were being taken up by farmers. So, on Thursday, I spent the day following Dinny Galvin around on his travels in the farming hinterland around Stangany Cooch in West Kerry.
Just be careful now, because this is liquid nitrogen and it's minus 200. So it's stuff you got to be.
You don't wear gloves, no?
Well, I have semen handling license. I'm very, very used to this, but
Dinny has got the call for the semen of one bull in particular. He's pretty sure that he doesn't have any of that sire's straws left, so he goes hunting through his flasks of liquid nitrogen in the back of his van for another sire that might be the next best thing.
So I'm taking out an AI straw here now, and I have to thaw that straw in a water heater for a minute at nothing more than 37 degrees.
And it only takes a minute to get it from minus 200 to body temperature, yeah?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm fetching my AI gun here now. And I give that a little bit of a wipe to heat it up, because stainless steel can be very cold, and I've always shoved it down my back. Because its body heat keeps it warm.
Now, sorry, is this just for the comfort of the lady that it's going to be inserted into, or is there an actual
it's important medical reason
as well?
Yes, it's important to keep the semen at body heat.
Okay.
Because the straw is dying from the minute you thaw it until the minute you get in. So my minute is up. I'm so used to this, I have it in my head. Mm-hmm. I take out the straw. I take my gun.
Out from behind your back.
From behind my back, and it's nice and warm. I put the straw in. I get my scissors, and I will take a quarter of an inch off the top of that straw. Now I've got to put a sheet over that, which is a plastic protector with a little cone, and I'm shoving that right up to the end, and I lock it with the button at the back. Now I push the trigger up to where I feel a little bit of resistance, so that straw is loaded and ready to go. That goes down my back.
The loaded gun of semen down your back.
Down my back.
Is that an industry-approved technique, or is that a Dinny-developed technique?
I guess it's a Dinny-developed technique. Yeah, it has always worked for me. I'd often have maybe four or five of them down my back. And maybe took out the wrong one and had to put it back in again. But it saves the feet. When you're doing this job, you're constantly walking and jumping in and out of crushes, and yeah, you're constantly on the move. Hi, Michael D, how are you?
Hi, Brian.
He's not exaggerating. Dinny milks 40 cows himself. So at a point in the calendar with calving finished that most dairy farmers get to take the foot off the pedal, Dinny enters the six busiest weeks of his year, getting straws at all hours of the day and night to any of the 90 farms that are his regular customers.
Hi, Seamus.
Hey, Kevin.
You made a bit of silage.
Yeah, before the rain,
yeah.
And this is where Dinny Galvin's business story takes a very interesting turn. He no longer just sells semen. He now sells sunshine too.
This is the milking parlour. We've been involved in quite a lot of initiatives through the Dingle Hub.
Dinny was already a divil for getting into the detail of how to reduce his energy bill.
I have an app on the phone. I can take out the app and I can see exactly what it's costing me to heat the water, cool the milk, milk the cows, Watrix, DC6 technologies.
And being a known and trusted face on so many farmyards for so many years meant that if there was anybody on the peninsula who was going to be able to gather farmers together into an effective energy cooperative, it was going to be Dinny.
I've seen the panels do 14 kilowatts there 1 or 2 days last week, which is super.
you're a bit of a nerd for this. You love this stuff, obviously. Were your neighbours and your colleagues elsewhere on the peninsula easy to convince?
It's hard to get through to some of the farming community at times. It's like I say, one of the surveys we did, quite a lot of the farmers didn't even have nightweight electricity. So that was educational.
You had a secret weapon, though. You already had their trust from selling them the AI straws.
I suppose that's true, yes. I had a little bit of inside information, and yeah, I got on well with all the farmers when I was working with them. Yeah.
And most importantly, as a kind of a salesman of an idea, they knew you, they already trusted you. When you turned up in the yard, they weren't going to run you.
No, definitely not, no. And, you know, I've been probably a bit of a nuisance to quite a lot of them, because if we send out a survey and, you know, farmers, I'll do that tonight, and it never gets done. So Ginny would pick up the phone and say, "Hi, Thomas, you know, would you do the old survey there for me?" And they go and do it, yeah. They trust me, yeah, thank God. Trust is a big thing in anything. Farmers don't like to be dictated from the top down. And to sort out all the missions, the farmers will engage. They will sit down and talk to people once they trust them. A bottom-up approach is the way for all these things to go. Don't dictate to the farmers from the top down. Go out, sit down with them. Go into the kitchen, sit down at the kitchen table, have a conversation with them. You will really, they'll open up to you once they trust you, and they'll find out, they'll let you know what's going on.
So many of the farmers coming together to tender for solar installation on the roofs of their sheds meant that they could drive the price right down. They've done so well for themselves on that front that the panels will now have paid for themselves in 2 years.
But yeah, the solar panels, look, I suppose they're probably the only thing that we can do here at the moment in terms independently of for generating electricity.
Dairy farmer Colm Murphy was persuaded by Dinny to throw his hat in the ring. He'll be getting the solar panels on his shed just as soon as he gets approval for his grid connection.
Independence, yeah. And
how much of you signing up to this scheme is down to the nag factor of having your man over here over our shoulder?
You have to be looking forward all the time, and you know, whether you know, if you go back, you know, to when electricity started, when they started doing the rural electrification, it's the same thing. It's progress, you know. Artificial insemination, Dinny did that, you know, that was a new thing, and it's kind of widely adopted now as well. So
you can't stand still if you want to farm in the 21st
you can't.
century.
No, you don't, you can't. And I just like the I like the idea, whether it'll give me a whole lot of independence or not, but I like the idea of being that little bit independent, you know.
Farming doesn't stand still, or can't.
So here we have Chalice and a couple of Angus, Hereford, Limousine. So we have to carry
a point that came home when myself and Dinny went back to chatting about the AI half of his business.
And there's three Frisians in here now. One of those is a Data Proven 4785.
The dairy industry had a very big problem in the numbers of unwanted male calves it was producing each year. Sexed semen was the answer, and the impressive rate at which farmers have embraced this technology is proven by Dinny barely being able to keep up with demand.
So how much of what you're selling now is sexed semen?
70% of it right now.
Good Lord, that high, really?
Two-thirds of it, yeah. This year has been absolutely... I mean, the bulls have been disappearing off unbelievably. But
that's quite a turnaround. I mean, how many sexed semen straws would you have been selling 3 years ago?
I'd say about 25-30%. So it has been getting there slowly, but like last year it was only roughly half, but it's 70% this year. So that'll give you an idea.
Its moment has arrived, hasn't it?
Its moment has arrived.
What are your customers saying to you about not having to deal with the bull calves now? Is that a big weight off their minds?
It is, yeah, because these bull calves would be sold for €5 in the mart. And I mean, some of these calves could be up to 3 weeks old. And to get €5, they'd have that drank 10 times over in the value of the milk. Not that the milk is very expensive now, but like, you know, and housing and labour is a massive, massive problem on most farms. There's big numbers of dairy cows, and labour is something that's very, very, you know. So they're delighted.
Dinny Galvin in Dingle. I wonder, is there anyone anywhere else in the world selling sunshine and semen to make a living? Joining me from our RTE Cork studio now this morning is Dr. Margaret Kelleher, Genetics Operation Manager with ICBF, the Independent Genetics Advisory Service for Farmers. I want to explore a little bit more some of the things that came up in that interview with Dinny. Good morning to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Philip.
How many of the, I think, 2.4 million calves that are going to be born this year will have come from a straw, Margaret?
That's very interesting. So I suppose of that 2.4 million, there's about 1.6 million sourced from the dairy side of the house. So we know in that sector that 80% of the calf crop is actually coming from AI. Then there, of course, there's the dairy beef that Dinny mentioned there as well. I mean, that's growing. So it was typically around a third and that's growing. So from AI and the rest would be stock bulls. And then on the beef side of the house, it's around 20% is what's coming from AI on the beef side.
That begs the question then, why are the rates of adoption in dairy and beef sectors so different?
Definitely, it's down to, in terms of the beef side, if you think about a lot of farmers there are part-time farmers, they have extra sources of income, so they really can't do the job of the bull. They can't be there to watch the cows.
In the way that a dairy farmer can be taking temperature constantly and knows exactly when's the right moment to AI.
Exactly, because they're full-time at it. And, you know, it's a highly skilled technique as well. You know, doing that job, you know, you're constantly watching cows. And, you know, farmers take a lot of measures to do that in terms of tail painting, scratch cards and so forth. So a very skilled operation.
Each of the straws that Diddy had in his flask would be associated with certain traits that you would expect to see in the calf that gets reproduced from that straw. Can you explain, please, Margaret, to the layperson, what traits a farmer can select for?
So there's a huge amount of traits. So we have a lot of data in a centralised database in ICBF, and that has worked to the advantage of the industry in that we have all this information. So the more information you get about an animal in terms of what traits produce profit. So that's what the farmer will be interested in. But also it has moved towards what traits are also more efficient and more carbon friendly. So you in the dairy side, you're going to get traits such as their milk and their quality of their milk, the health of the animal, the fertility of the animal and the maintenance. So, you know, what's the energy requirement for this animal? And on the beef side, it's very similar as well. You know, if you have animals there, you want better carcass quality traits. And again, health and fertility, they're all hugely important.
You've seen, of course, that TB figures are still on the rise. What kind of success have you had in breeding more TB resistant animals?
Yeah, it's a very new development. Basically, what we have is, so first of all, TB can be bred for. There can be TB resistance bred for in terms of that there is genetics that are passed on from parent to offspring. So,
not foolproof, I'd imagine, though.
Not foolproof, but it's definitely, you know, another tool in the toolkit, as it were, in terms of trying to improve it. So as you've mentioned, the trends are not going in the right direction nationally, and you know that's a very devastating impact to have at a farm level. So what people can do now is within each of the indexes, so in the dairy one we have the EBI, TB was included into that recently, so you can select for more TB resistant bulls, and likewise there in the terminal and replacement index, so that's what the beef farmers use, those two indexes, they also now can see their TB figure. So there's large variation there. You know, you know it's 14% heritable. So 14% of TB resistance is under genetic control.
Another trait that we reported on about a year ago or so on Countrywide was the ability now to select animals with lower methane emissions. There was a really ambitious breeding project that Chagas was researching that they were looking at, I think, maybe as much as a 1% reduction in methane a year if people adopted it. To what extent are farmers able now to select for lower methane emitting cattle?
Well, again, it's all about data collection. So there's been massive efforts there by Chagas and other research institutes and ourselves in ICBF in terms of collecting data. It's a really, really hard one to collect because, you know, an animal actually emits it from, you know, from burping, from digestion. So most of it comes out through their mouth. And to collect that, it goes up into the atmosphere. So there's been a lot of initiatives out there. One example would be these green feed machines. So it's like an animal will voluntarily walk up to this machine. They'll get a little treat in a bowl, and it's like a big hood over their head, like what you'd have in your kitchen, an extractor fan, actually sucking in and taking in this methane. So while we're collecting data, we have run genetic evaluations for methane, and we do actually have a standalone methane index available on the ICBF website. So farmers can actually see what bulls emit more methane and what ones are less likely to emit it. So in the future, I do see and anticipate that when we have enough records that we can stand over and say, no, this actually, we're quite confident in our figures here now, they, you know, potentially will actually enter the mainstream indexes that we have. In the absence of that, what we do have is the carbon equivalent. So what we're doing there is there, instead of having the direct methane trait, there is all these indirect traits that we can predict what methane is coming from them and other carbon emission sources. Okay. So that has been included recently to the indexes.
And Margaret, when you look at the speed with which sexed semen has been adopted, Dini selling up to 70% sexed semen straws now, do you think that we might be on the cusp of a similar breakthrough with farmers being able to make a proactive choice to go and choose to breed less methane emitting cattle?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, like, in fairness, the ag industry has been very active in trying every measure that they can to reduce methane and other sources of greenhouse gases from their farms. So definitely, I mean, the trends in terms of, there's been many different shifts in the usage of AI. You know, typically, you know, if you were talking about 20 years ago, everyone was just focused on, you know, milk traits in the dairy herd, carcass traits in the beef herd. Whereas now, people have moved on to more efficiency traits such as the fertility, the survivability, the health and the welfare of the animals. And now it's really moving into the space of carbon.
Let's go back to Dini's flask for one moment again, please, because there were some bulls that were particularly popular. I don't remember the numbers, but I know that the kind of pet names or nicknames for them were Mr. Man and Star Trek. If a bull is particularly popular, though, how many calves can they end up siring in any year? And does there end up being an inbreeding or a narrowing of the genetic pool problem that arises from that?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So recently, what you'd see with the top performing bulls in terms of, you know, the most popular bulls that we see in the last few years, you know, you could see anywhere around 30,000 to 40,000 calves hitting the ground.
Oh my God! That's some legacy. That's some legacy, isn't it?
Very lucky bull. Sorry, that was insemination. So maybe half of that would actually result in a resulting calf. But I suppose
there's men out there feeling very inadequate this morning listening to that now, thinking about 30,000 children running around.
But I suppose it's interesting to look at it over time. So if you were to go back maybe again 10, 15 years ago and these popular bulls were out there, and you know, they'd be on the list, you know, they'd be on the top of the list there in terms of who you choose for a number of years. They could be there for 7, 8, 9 years, and their own daughters are coming into the herd, and you know, there was, you know, difficulty there in dealing with inbreeding. Fast forward to today, we have a revolutionary technology there now, which is genomics. So it came into cattle breeding in Ireland in 2009. So we're looking at the DNA of the animals. So what has changed again, you know, and Dini would probably be a testament to this as well, is the number one bull doesn't stay on the list very, very long anymore, because as soon as, you know, we find this fantastic, really popular bull, it's actually most likely the sons of him that will be the next crop of them, and the sons and sons. So that has helped with genetic diversity in one way, in that, you know, the one bull isn't there the whole lot too long, and his daughter's coming back into the herd while he's still in use. But definitely, okay, you still have to manage the sons of sons, and we have programs out there such as Sire Advice in ICBF Herd Plus, where you can tell farmers not to breed certain bulls to certain cows.
That answers that question then. But the sex semen question must raise a different set of problems for you, because if we're now breeding more heifers than bull calves, who is breeding the future bull sires of tomorrow?
Yeah, it's a really important question, and one that there's a lot of people, you know, now researching and talking about. So if we were just to take at, you know, what's the kind of breakdown of what's going on out there at the moment? So if I was talking to you about 2 years ago, typically what you'd see in the national herd is that 27% of the straws would result in females, 27% would also be males. So they were like a 50-50, and 46% would be beef coming off the dairy herd. However, now we're seeing, as Dinny was mentioning, the popularity of sex semen has increased by about 50% year on year for the last 3 years. So what we're seeing now is less of these dairy male calves. Now, there's still about 20% there at the moment, but where this is going is likely to see only around 3% of male calves and 70% dairy beef calves. So look, in terms of what we have nationally at the moment, 90% of the AI bulls are actually homebred Irish bulls, which is fantastic. 20 years ago, we were always importing you know, genetics to, you know, looking for strengths in those bulls. However, you know, there's definitely a change here. So it could be a case of importing, looking elsewhere, or looking at different embryos, or actually having nucleus herds here in Ireland actually specialised in breeding bulls. So it's quite interesting, one the AI companies are very, very active on, and the research institutes.
Margaret, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Dr. Margaret Kelleher, Genetics Operation Manager with ICBF. Coming up after the break, allowing land become a tax break for the wealthy.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.